Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Roger, all.
Well, greetings from all over the place. The people that are listening from the Earth, in the cosmos and beyond. This is Martin Horst speaking on ET First Contact Radio with the latest galactic news. My guest today is John Rappaport. And John Rappaport is an American journalist and author who has worked as a freelance investigator reporter for over 30 years. He is the author of 3 explosive collections, The Matrix Revealed, Exit from the Matrix, and The Power Outside the Matrix. He has written articles on politics, health, media, culture, and art for the Los Angeles Weekly, Spin Magazine, Stern, Village Voice, Nexus, CBS Health Watch, and other newspapers and magazines in the US and Europe. In 1982, in LA, Weekly submitted his name for the Pulitzer Prize for his interview with the president of El Salvador University, where the military had taken over the campus. John has hosted, produced, and written radio programs and segments in Los Angeles and Las Vegas, the KPFK and KLAV networks, and he has appeared as a guest on over 200 radio and television programs, including ABC's Nightline, Tony Brown's Journal on PBS, and Hard Copy. In 1994, John ran for a seat in the U.S. Congress from the 29th District of Los Angeles. After 6 months of campaigning on a very small budget, he garnered 20% of the vote, running against an incumbent who had occupied his seat for over 20 years. In 1996, John started the Great Boycott against 8 corporate chemical giants: Monsanto, Dow Chemical, DuPont, Bayer, Hoechst, and Ron Poulenc, Imperial Chemical Industries, and Ciba Geigy. The boycott continues to operate until today. John has lectured extensively all over the U.S. on the question, who runs the world and what can we do about it? Since the year 2000, John has operated largely away from the mainstream because, as he puts it, my research was not friendly to the conventional media. Neither is mine, John. And over the last 30 years, John's independent research has encompassed such areas as deep politics, conspiracies, alternative health, the potential of human imagination, mind control, the medical cartel, symbology, and solutions to the takeover of the planet by hidden elites. He maintains a consulting practice for private clients, the purpose of which is the expansion of personal creative power. A painter, John's work has been shown in galleries in Los Angeles and New York. His poetry has been published by the Massachusetts Review. He is a graduate of the Amherst College, BA in philosophy, and lives with his wife, Dr. Laura Thompson, in San Diego, California. And then I just want to mention the books before we have John welcome to the show. The Matrix Revealed by John Rappaport, Power Outside the Matrix by John Rappaport, and Exit from the Matrix by John Rappaport. So with this beautiful introduction, John, I want to welcome you heartfully to my show, ET First Contact Radio. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
It is excellent to have you. I must tell you, John, that for the last 20 years, I've been researching and thinking about how we can end the status quo, because the status quo is holding the whole population from this planet into a low vibration and in the mind-controlled cave of illusion, and I want the planet to break free from it. So, my friend John, can you tell us how you came into this material, and how did you find out about the fact that we've been lied to, and when did you have your awakening?
Well, I started in as a reporter in 1982, writing for LA Weekly in Los Angeles. And soon enough, I discovered that the stories that I was investigating always showed that there was some hidden influence behind the scenes, big money, big power, etc. And so in 1987, I met with a publisher on the West Coast who wanted to do a book about fraudulent medical research. And by that, he meant research in laboratories, germ research, etc., etc. Deep fraud. And so we signed a contract, and the book came to be known as AIDS, Inc., Scandal of the Century, which was published in 1988. And that's where I really began to learn about how deception works from official sources, sources that are supposed to be objective and neutral and working for the benefit of humanity, when in fact the opposite was true. And this led me into the whole world of what we could call intelligence operations, covert intelligence operations, where you have cover-ups, disguises, false trails, what the intelligence agencies call limited hangouts, which are partial admissions in order to cover the deeper truth. And so somewhere in that period of time, 1987, 1988, I came to the conclusion that, you know, the world is not what we think it is. The way it operates, the way reality is presented to us, is really a fiction. It's a purposeful fiction. And it's as if there are what you could call perverse artists who are designing reality for us and trying to get us to look at it and believe that this is the reality, the only reality, when in fact it isn't. So that breakthrough for me was around that time period, 1988.
Well, John, this is amazing, because if I look at your work, I looked a bit on the internet today, and I love to say, because I am still quite young and new into the field of investigative journalism, and I want you to get the Pitzer Prize, by the way. But it's always good to have a master or a teacher or a big example of somebody who has already dig deep, so to say, into the material of the status quo and the way the powers that be cover up news stories and make news that is profitable and it's misleading people, because, as you said, the reality as it's presented is not a reality as I see it. So for me, it's an honor to have you on the show and to see how you got into this material. Now, for example, when I look CNN or other mainstream media channels, the way the news is presented, because it's always about the same things like fear-mongering, war, there's war here, there's violence there, there's poverty there, and I would call it the Matrix, the way they present it, because it's always about the same topics. There are many topics in the mainstream news that are not discussed or ridiculed. For example, UFOs and extraterrestrial contact. So what is the driving force behind the major news networks like CNN and the mainstream media, who are presenting news every day, time and time again, with the same a handful of topics that are always about war? Why is that? And how is that coming? Who is planning this? What are the people behind it? Who are doing this?
Well, in the United States, for example, you have the military-industrial complex, which is the Pentagon, the armed forces, the White House, Congress, and all of these major corporations, defense contractors, that make untold billions and even trillions of dollars on the idea that war is necessary, that we have enemies everywhere, and that we have to be prepared to fight, and that we must invade in order to stay safe and secure. So this is a partnership, you might say, that has grown up organically over a very long period of time. And it's also a strategy for throwing nations into irretrievable debt, because wars are very expensive. So this is basically war promotion that you see on the news. These are advertisements for war. These are reasons given by the same sources over and over again as to why we must have this war and that war, and we have to go there to fight this war, and so on and so forth. And mm-hmm. The media basically go along with this wholeheartedly. For example, in the United States, after the September 11, 2001 attacks, mm-hmm. and then the drumbeats toward war in Iraq, mm-hmm. you find that the mainstream media were completely and utterly enthusiastic and supportive of the idea of going to war mm-hmm. in Iraq, which had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11.
No.
But years and years later, 5 years, 10 years later, you see some of these same media outlets and reporters running stories saying, well, there was really no reason to go to war, or the reasons were bogus and false, we were deceived, and yes, and this, and that, and so forth, and books are written in the aftermath, long after the fact. But at the time, you see a wholehearted consensus in the media for going to war because of the partnership, the idea that there are trillions of dollars to be made on war. Media ratings go sky high during wartime, which means that these media outlets can charge much more money to their advertisers. You know, everybody makes tremendous profit except the people, and except the soldiers who fight and die. But that is not considered to be important by the people in power. So this is why you see war being essentially advertised and promoted all the time on major media. But it is also, I have to say, a psychological operation. In other words, a great deal of what elites are involved in is about the demoralization of the population, to get them to feel apathetic, accepting, cynical. There's no way out. There's nothing you can do about it, etc., etc. And this is what happens to populations when there is war, 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 war.
Yeah.
People feel, well, we're in a trap. There's no way out. And so what happens to people? This is a form of mind control. They become less awake, more hypnotized, less independent, less thoughtful, less free, less rebellious, because they're driven into the ground by this hammering over and over and over again by the media. And that is, to my way of analysis, the most important objective of this whole operation in the media, is to drive people into a state of acquiescence and despair, where they feel that nothing can be done about anything. Because that's what you want from a population if you are trying to control the population. You don't want people to be well-educated, independent individuals, free, powerful, aware. You want to keep them in a state of a dreary kind of aimless thinking, mindlessness, confusion, and above all, in a passive state of mind where they don't feel that they can do anything. This is a key to mind control on the whole planet. It doesn't require placing individual thoughts in people's minds and very, you know, there are these sophisticated research projects ongoing, of course, in that direction, but by and large, the kind of mind control that you see on planet Earth is about making people feel hopeless. Because if you can accomplish that, then people are much easier to control. Go here, do that, don't do this, don't talk about that. All of these things are much easier to accomplish when people are passive. So
yes,
this is very important to understand about the media and the role of the media.
Yes, because I think the most powerful tool the elite has is using the mainstream media to get people in this cage and to make them hypnotized and passive and not react and not be proactive. But what are the tools that you have written in your book? Because I think you have, as I understand from a summary I've read, on Amazon, what are the tools and what are the abilities we have as a population, as an awakened population, to take action against the mainstream media and the powers that be, so that we can have truthful information to the public? What kind of steps can we take in this matter?
Okay. Well, first of all, and I think this is very important to understand, it all starts with the individual. There is a tremendous amount of propaganda that has been going on for the last 20 years or so, that the individual is not important. In fact, the individual is the problem, and the solution is the group or the collective. And that is pure propaganda, because waking up is an individual undertaking. It's not a group undertaking. So if you would go into any college or university in America or probably anywhere in the world and look for a course about the free, powerful, creative individual. You would find absolutely nothing. Well, I'd like to take a course this semester in the free, powerful, and creative individual and really explore what that means. Well, sorry, we don't teach that. There's nothing even vaguely related to that as far as academic work in universities. And this is for a reason, because the solutions to our problems do, in fact, begin with the individual. And the ability of the individual to be truly independent and logical and creative and active. Now, starting from that point, everything is about decentralization of power. Decentralization of power away from the institutions that currently have all the power, especially mainstream media, because they have continued to be the main source of centralized power when it comes to information on the planet. So we see with the internet that a massive decentralization of that power is underway, with alternative websites and blogs and thoughtful researchers and investigators who are waking people up by the results of their investigations, so that people no longer accept what they're being told by major media or by government or by big corporations. They are now looking for sources of information outside mainstream media, which means that a great decentralization of that power is well underway and has been for some years now on the internet. So those are two beginning factors in solutions to our problem. And then another subject about which I write extensively is the hidden power of individual imagination, because it's there that people begin to build alternative structures, alternative futures, alternative worlds, if you will. It's not just a simple matter of saying, well, we have to fix this problem and solve that problem and so forth, because the problems never end. We do need to solve problems, yes, of course, but individual imagination is the source of tremendous underground rivers of energy that most individuals are cut off from because they think that imagination is something for a child. And when they reach the age of maturity, they have to give all that up, and then they have to do this and become very practical and fit into society and the status quo, as you mentioned. Now we have to become normal, and we have to become average, and we have to be part of society, and we have to listen to what the recognized experts have to say, et cetera, you know, all of this kind of thing, you see. Whereas individual imagination says, absolutely not. What you have to do is decide what it is in life that you most want to create that is new and different, and then you need to do it. And you don't get to that place without accessing and using your imagination. And this is one of the great crimes of our society, that in schools, in the home, in the workplace, imagination is completely squashed, ignored, buried, so that what you get now are versions of robots and androids in the population. People who can't imagine anything different from the status quo. They accept the status quo, and then they attempt to fit in. And this is the downfall of society and civilization, always has been.
Yes, that is true, and that sadly enough, it is true. well, my interest in investigative journalism was also born from being imaginary, to imagine a different reality, to imagine a world where people are doing in their jobs, in their hobbies, what they are born for, what their purposes, their sole purposes, but things that inspire people. That's the world I would like to see, where arts and literature and music is performed. And I know this reality is possible because we have all the technologies to produce where what we need. For example, if you speak about zero-point energy and that kind of things. So, John, do you think there are people and forces and power on and off the planet that are helping us in the liberation process of ourselves and the system we live in, and of course, the flow of information? Do you think this will change in the future? Do you think there's hope and a way to break through this system and live in a better world that is promised by all the people that are channeling, ascended masters that are speaking about the new golden age, etc.? Do you think this will come soon? Do you think we can all, if we all work together as awakened people on the internet, do you think it's possible to make this world come about?
I certainly think it's possible, but I don't think, I have to say, the overemphasis on these friendly forces that are helping us is not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Because then what you get are a whole lot of people who are waiting for it to happen.
Yes.
It's happening soon. No, well, it didn't happen, but the next year. And now somebody says, guess what? There are certain up on a mountain somewhere, and they know everything, and they're, you know, I'm exaggerating, of course, but, you know, this kind of thing tends to promote among people who are only half awake the idea that somebody is going to do it for us. Someone is going to deliver us from the situation that we are in. My experience in life is if you live through and by imagination and create with tremendous intensity the thing that you most desire and most want to see in the world, things will happen to help you. And you can call that whatever you want. But you have to meet it more than halfway. And I frankly want to see people get up off their duff and do it themselves and not wait around for this kind of thing to happen. Because in the most extreme case, we are, unfortunately, looking at yet another form of mind control. Well, this master over here and this master over there, they're going to fix it, you see. They're in the process of fixing it. And all we have to do is tune in to what they're doing, and it'll all work out. No, it won't work out. That's not the way it happens. That's part of the mind control. That's part of the operation. That's part of an idea that has been stretched to the point of exaggeration, extreme exaggeration. you know, I think that most people in life experience exactly what I'm talking about. If you make a tremendous effort in a very positive direction, you're going to be met halfway by people who want to help you. But they have to see that that's what you're doing. And they have to feel that it is authentic, what it is that you're doing. I'm afraid that most people who look to the idea of external forces that are going to revolutionize the world in a good way have taken it too far.
Mm-hmm.
And that's self-serving on their part, because it's an excuse. We're looking to the sky for rescue. Rescue is not coming from the sky. I mean, just look at the practicalities. If you were circling the sky in a spaceship from a very distant star, and you came from an extremely advanced civilization, and you looked down at planet Earth and saw the condition that it's in, the population of the planet, and really looked at it head on, what would you think? I'll tell you what you would think. You would say, these people are on the road to self-destruction. They've been on that road for a long time. Now, is there some way that we can change that at the root? That we can actually interfere with the free will of billions of individuals and turn all that around so that they are now looking in the right direction and thinking the right thoughts and doing the right things? Absolutely not. If you came from advanced civilization, you would understand that as, you know, one of your first principles. You have to have the population of the planet meet you halfway. Just like, you know, if you were working in a job, in a legitimate company, I'm not talking about some evil giant corporation, you know, a nice small business where everybody was really tuned in the right direction to do something good. And you were an employee, and you looked to your own boss to deliver you from your own passivity and somehow get you to perform much better than you were already. You're in for a terrible shock. It's not going to happen. Even if the boss wanted to, how is he going to make that occur? You have to be, as they say, self-motivated, or nothing is going to happen. So when I give lectures on this subject, or when I work with private clients, it's all about expanding creative power, not just as a thought or intellectual thing, but in terms of action, the action of imagination, the action of creating something in the world that didn't exist before. Now you're really doing something. Now you're expressing your own power. Now you're expressing your own energy. Now you're inspired. Now you're getting free. Now you're getting smarter. Now you're getting more independent. Now you deserve to be helped because you're doing it yourself.
Exactly. Well, this is a very important that you say this, John, because if I imagine the variety of things we could do as human population to change the world, there are many ways we can do it, and we have to be proactive and not wait indeed for external sources to rescue us, because then people become passive and in a state of awaiting changes. But we have to make the changes ourselves. And I've been thinking, for example, if 10,000 people or 100,000 people would write letters and emails to the mainstream media that they want to see another way of news reporting, then they can't ignore this. So there are many ways in which the population could take action. Now, do you have ideas, practical ideas, how we can change the status quo? But first of all, maybe you can describe what is the root of the problems in the world. And after you have described the core of the problems in the world, the root, can you then come with practical ways in which you can take out this root of the core of the problem?
Well, I think I've already done some of that. Because, you see, again, start with the individual. No matter who the individual is or where he lives, yes, there is power that is not his power. There is corruption that is not his corruption. There is influence on him that is not his own influence. Yes, all of these things exist to one degree or another. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more. It depends where that person is. What is that person going to do? What is that person going to create that is going to be different and better? And let me give you an example. For example, there is a form of what you could call alternative energy, but it is not really alternative, that has been well researched, demonstrated on many occasions, and is hugely available. And that is the power to generate electricity through water, streams, rivers, oceans, to turn turbines to create electricity without using extraordinary amounts of oil. In other words, the return is enormous compared to the initial effort. And there was such a project in the state of Maine in the United States that started, I believe, as early as the 1920s, and it was called Passamaquoddy, which is an Indian term, but it's also a region in the state of Maine, off the shore, where the high tide and the low tide undergo a tremendous difference during the day, very high, very low, lots of action in the water. And it was seen to be an ideal place to create electricity. And so the project began. And it ran into an enormous amount of red tape and conflicts from public utilities companies and governments and private interests and outside interference, of course, because this could replace oil. And when John F. Kennedy was a senator in the U.S. in the 1950s, he was extremely interested in this project. And he spoke about it. And after he became president, he put in a request for a report on what had been happening all these years with Passamaquoddy. And he got the report. And the report indicated that indeed this could be a very viable way of producing energy that would free us from oil. And by extension, not just there, in that particular inlet off the beach, but around the entire continent, wherever you would see variations in tide, which is, you know, many, many, many places. And so he tried to push this forward, but it still stalled. And then, of course, he was assassinated, and the whole thing just kind of fell apart, which is where it is today. Well, there are people out there, many, many people, who have a grasp of energy technology for whom this kind of thing could become an enterprise in entrepreneurship, in starting something from scratch, not necessarily at Passamaquoddy, but elsewhere. And in fact, there are companies who will install small turbines in rivers and create electricity locally and so on and so forth. So for those people, here is a tremendous solution, because one thing we know on this planet is we have to become free of oil, because the desire and the obsession about oil is driving many, many wars, many, many invasions, many, many covert intelligence agencies, and all kinds of fantastic chaos and destruction and death. So to be free of that would be remarkable. Now, of course, I understand, and I'm sure most of your listeners do, that there are a whole variety of strategies in alternative energy, but I'm talking about one that is extremely plentiful and is cheap to produce. So where are the individuals who are ready to do this? Let's do it. Come on. Put together a company. And I've spoken with individuals like this before, and I've given out my recommendations on the best way to do this and the best way to avoid somebody coming in from the outside and trying to stop it, and how to handle your production and your marketing and your sales so that you can get some of this off the ground without suddenly finding, you know, your factory burned down or whatever. So here's an example of a real solution. It's a marvelous solution. It's a fantastic solution. It's a beautiful solution. It requires people with vision, imagination, creativity, who are independent, thoughtful, strong, not involved in massive collectivism and groupthink, and, you know, somebody is going to rescue me from above, but people who know what it's like to feel inspired and to then swing into action. That is one of the most ecstatic things you can do in your life, is to have a vision that comes out of your imagination and then swing into action and actually push forward toward the objective with strategies that work. That's a fantastic way to live your life. Not waiting around and hoping and thinking and, you know, this and that and all of that, and falling into a doldrum of passivity and self-hypnosis and mind control and cynicism and despair. You know, this is about getting up off your ass and actually doing something that is creative and productive and exciting and thrilling. And as I've found in working with many people over the years and from my own personal experience, when you do this, the transformation in your own consciousness is enormous. And I'm not talking about ordinary little things. I'm talking about latent, hidden power that is in a state of potential within the individual that comes to the forefront. And when that happens, some remarkable changes occur in the individual, such as paranormal experiences of seeing the future before it happens, experiences of knowing what other people are thinking, experiences of what people like to call synchronicity, where suddenly things come together for no apparent cause and effect reason and produce a positive result. I'm talking about all kinds of extraordinary abilities. And these are not separate, these abilities, from living creative life through and by your own imagination with great power and freedom. These things are not separate. It's all part of the same thing. And people don't understand that. They try to separate these things. They're not separate. They go together. And this is a way of transformation of the individual as well as transformation of the planet. How long would it take? Well, see how long it's taken for us to get where we are now. So it's not going to be snap your fingers overnight. But nothing really is. So that's not a problem. You work in that direction. And I want to see more of that happening. Not just in the field of energy, I just gave that as an example, but say, for example, in the field of education. I mean, in a couple of my collections, Matrix collections, in one I have a basic course included on logic, and in another, a course that I devised, which I call Analyzing Information in the Age of Disinformation, extensive, the purpose of which is self-education. And this kind of education can be applied to young people as well, to wake them up. You have a mind. You can use it. You can follow a line of reasoning. You can see flaws in what other people are presenting as the truth. You can become independent and able to judge information and sources of information on your own. Okay, so somebody out there, start a school. Start your own school. Make it a fantastic school. Really educate young people. You know, solutions abound. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But people have to have their own vision of how, what this is for them and what they can do and how they can do it. And then they have to do it. And when they do, their life will be changed forever in ways they can't even conceive of now. I know that from my personal experience, and I know that from working with private clients, that this is the case. Solutions are everywhere.
Yes. Well, John, I believe that it's very important that we also, well, all of us, start to reason and start to use logic and start to educate ourselves, not only by adding content to our knowledge, but the way we think, to change the way we think and learn. Because if we know how we learn and how we think and how we gather information and analyze and process this information, because I believe we are structurally modifiable, our cognition can be structured and modified permanently if we learn something. So as you were saying, solutions are everywhere, but the main thing is that we change the way we think and how we think so that we can work together collectively and be proactive and take action to make this world a beautiful place. And yes, I also think, I hoped in maybe 5 years ago that it would be done in a snap of a finger because many promises that were made. But I believe we all have to work very hard, like in the post-Second World War, where Europe was rebuilt after destruction. I think now we have to rebuild the whole world from the destruction of capitalism and start to use all these beautiful examples that you gave about free energy. Because, for example, in this region here where I live, there are many deltas of rivers where this would be very applicable to use generators in the tide. So let's all work together, my friends, all the people that are listening. And John, maybe you can share with the listeners your website and the books that you have written, and then also share your best wishes for humankind and for this planet and for the future.
Yes, my website is nomorefakenews.com, and you can go there and see the free articles that I write almost every day. Sign up for my free email list to get the articles, and you can read about my three collections, Matrix collections, and you can order them there. And keep this in mind. because of the downfall of education, most people these days, as you say, don't know how to think. They just reach out for a little bit of information here, and they look at it, and then they go over there, and they go here, and it's kind of like a magnetic attraction of a very low level. Because the educational system has been intentionally geared to produce a short and shorter attention span. But when people change the process by which they think, they can begin to see a whole line of thinking and how this goes from there, and then this follows from that, and then that follows, and they can follow it all the way down. And now they become critical, logical, independent. They can see the good reasoning and the faulty reasoning. And their whole mode of thinking begins to change. And that's one of the things that I do in my articles.
Are you aware of the term metacognition, when you think about your thinking?
Yes, I'm aware of it. I believe that the solution lies in learning logic. If you learn logic, then all of that is solved for you. But you have to do it. Your thinking will change. You don't have to examine your own thought processes so much as you do learn a different, new way of thinking. That is not just like, you know, going to a marketplace and saying, give me one of these, and, oh, I'll take one of those. And, you know, no. It's a more comprehensive kind of thinking that allows you to see deeper, higher, larger in scope. That is one of my major occupations as a writer and author and as a reporter. So, of course, I wish everybody well. I wish all of us well. But again, remember, it starts with the individual. If it doesn't start there, nothing happens. And that would be my final thought today.
Yes. Well, I would say that when all the individuals take action and then start to work together, then I think there's a chance we can change the timeline and change the paradigm and change the status quo. but there is hope, but we have to do it ourselves. So this was Martin Horst with ET First Contact Radio. My guest was John Rappaport. And John, I will pray and hope that you will get this Pitzer Prize, because I am sure that you deserve it. And I would love to read your books. And I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated the conversation.
Yes, it was very insightful and new for me, all the information. And I want to thank you for the work you have done and all the research you have done. And I want to commend you for it and congratulate you with it. And I want to thank all the listeners, and I want to thank Donald and Douglas from BBS Radio for this show. And I will be there next week. Thank you and namaste.